Hello, beautiful people. I hope you're doing well out there. Whew, it has been a time. I had to kind of step away a little bit because there's just been so much grief. In fact, today I have to share that I am in grief, which is kind of a interesting and weird place to be in. This month in general is very griefy for me. It has a lot of anniversaries, death and loss and trauma and some birthdays mixed in there. So I always kind of feel a little bit, I feel a certain kind of way about July. And today my cat is missing. And so I woke up with this when I realized it, I woke up with this stone in my stomach. My chest. And I just want to share with you that, now that I'm reflecting hours later, I chose to fast this morning, and then it kind of made me feel a little out of body, a little detached. And I don't want to judge that. I just want to say, it's interesting to see what our coping mechanisms are. I don't know that that was the best choice, but it's what I did, and now I'm definitely drinking water and eating and everything. But it's like losing a child, and this cat has been with me through some of the deepest, darkest nights of the soul. And I was just thinking, because I'm writing my memoir now, which is very exciting. She's the only other being that was a witness to all of this disgusting, terrible, nightmarish shit that I lived through. And so it's just an interesting time for her to go missing, and hopefully she will come back. But I just want to say, I know many of you are probably like, oh no. She has been trying to just be free for 4 years. I mean, she's an indoor-outdoor cat, and it's just so interesting about the impermanence of things and, the anticipatory grief and how we try and control things that we can't control. And this is why I really wanted to share this episode with you today, even though my heart is breaking. Because my guest actually is someone that I follow to get advice about grief from. You might know her as The Glorious Hum, my friend Naomi. She hosts a space called Black Folks Grieve. And, she kind of sort of centers her grief work around the BIPOC and queer community. But I would say anyone who is looking for someone who represents how to be authentic with grief should go and find her and tell her Moon Says Hi, please. And, if you could share this episode in your socials, that would be so helpful, because it does help us build our networks. Because, we're just trying to help people find each other and connect and support each other. One of the things I really love and appreciate about Naomi is that she always gives permission to herself and to others to just be with the grief, right? Surround yourself with what makes you feel comfortable. Maybe unplug your phone, detach from the news or social media until you feel grounded. And even though that might sound kind of duh, of course, we need those reminders and we need people to represent that for us, because when you feel frozen or panicky or isolated, it can be hard to know which way to go. You know what I'm saying? So I'm excited to share this episode with you. We talked about everything, how grief is just so prevalent in our world, in our cultures, in our communities, and we really need each other to help get through. So thank you for listening, and I will be back after the episode. It's really good to see you. Last time we spoke, you were getting ready to go on a birthday trip.
Mm-hmm.
How was that?
Oh my God, my birthday trip was amazing. I had such a hard time coming back, honestly. It was so warm, and it was just really nice to be in the country that my grandmother and my mom was from. Like, that energy was just so nice to be in the water and be on the beach and eat the food that reminded me of her. Like, it felt really special.
Wow.
Yeah.
I haven't been to Jamaica yet, but I imagine it's sort of got that paradise energy.
Yeah, it's got that. And then it's also just, you know, like, real people live there. So it's very much that, but also very much like that, just like the cultural energy of like the music and the people and the food. Like, it just very much reminded me of my childhood growing up. And it was really nice to be in a place to reconnect to that. And I feel like it felt especially lovely for my 33rd birthday, Jesus year, as if we want to call it that.
For some reason, yeah, that didn't really suit me either. But is that because Jesus died at 33?
Yeah, maybe it's that. It's a little morbid, but it kind of goes with our theme here. So
it does. Exactly. That's why I wasn't afraid to ask you, because I'm like, is that why people say that? But yeah, I guess he died.
I also guess during your 33rd year, you do kind of die in a way. Like, you become a new version of yourself. Like, relationships die, versions of yourself die. Things maybe you wanted at certain points maybe die and turn into other things. So it's about transformation.
Definitely. And it's interesting. It only, in my experience, it only gets deeper as you get, you know, towards 40.
Yeah.
And so, you know, now I'm going to be in my mid 40s. And so I'm so curious to see like what the next, you know, layers are. Right. Because you're right. There's a lot of life death cycles after your 20s.
Adulting's hard.
It is.
Adulting's real hard.
How do you feel? I think I remember you saying something about you were going to kind of make this trip. I mean, you're thinking about your mom and your grandmother, but you were going to kind of maybe try and separate that out a little bit for yourself.
Yeah. And I think I honestly did that. Just simply going where I went. Like, I went to Negril, and my grandmother was from Port Maria. So it's like two parts. So it was really nice to be in the country where she was from, but also not necessarily be exactly where she was from, because I just felt like I don't think I'm emotionally ready to do that part yet. But it felt really nice to be in Jamaica proper and just like feel her energy there.
Mm.
Yeah.
I'm glad I got to see you before and after, because I was curious about that. Yeah, that's epic, you know?
Yeah. Oh, felt so nice to be back. I definitely had a moment of like, why do I still live in the U.S. again?
I'm
why
sure.
Why are we coming back here?
Yeah.
So tacky here. I just had the gathering for Black Folks Grieve, like my first one after taking a bit of an extended break, just to give myself a break and just sort of engage some other parts of my life. And that went really, really well. People came and were really ready to talk and really ready to like witness and hold each other. So that was really wonderful. And I feel like the subject of grief has really been coming up a lot lately, especially in my corner of the world, being in New York with all of the violent attacks against Asian women. There's also been a lot of attacks against like the elderly here. There's everything happening with abortion rights. There is everything happening in the Ukraine. So like the topic of grief is like very present. And I think my struggle has been trying to figure out how and when to tap in and how and when to tap out. Like, what is that fine line between like reading enough to be informed and then also being able to step back from my own mental health and be like, okay, this is all I can absorb today. And now we're just gonna go watch something stupid for our mental health, you know?
Right.
I think that's definitely been coming up for me for sure.
Yeah. And then don't forget Florida.
you know, where you kind of say gay.
Yeah.
Which is so dumb. And
things just get dumber as time goes on.
Right?
Switch to a monthly basis after having it be bi-weekly for a while. And I did that really in order to sort of maintain the sustainability of it. Mm-hmm. And I really did that for me too, because I found that being bi-weekly, like, it feels wonderful to have something that's so readily available. But I feel like it also made it really hard for me to make sure that I was taking care of myself emotionally after hearing and holding all of this. So we just had our first one as a monthly offering, and it actually felt really wonderful to just like have the space and have enough space for people to come and hold each other and to know that it is like once a month. So like they want to tap back in next month, they can do that. And also it gives me enough time to sort of like make sure that I'm caring for myself in a way that makes sure that I can properly sustain the space in a way that I want to, and to show up like the way that I want to, and like do the least amount of harm and show up ethically and like create safer space.
Everything you're saying, I love it. Because that's kind of the dance, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's totally the dance. I think especially like for Black, Brown, Indigenous, queer folk who are trying to create and sustain and aid community, it's like you want to rush out and like help your community and help the people that you love. And you also want to be able to take care of yourself at the same time. I mean, I know it's really cliche, but it's true. That thing about like not being able to like pour from an empty cup is real, you know?
Right. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I think that that's really science,
right?
Which is real.
Yeah.
So
some of the ways that we help people deal with grief is literally just talking about it. So maybe it's not an offering. Maybe it's literally just posting like, hey, I am going through this and I'm not like, I'm okay, but I'm not okay right now. Like, how are you? And it's okay for you to not be okay, because the world's literally burning. And
right.
It would be a little odd if we were all like 100% okay right now, you know? So I think part of the journey too is figuring out ways to show up and figuring out where you fit in. And those don't necessarily look like offerings and like doing. Sometimes it can just be as simple as putting out how you feel and allowing people to access it and then sit with it for themselves.
Yeah, I love your posts, you know, when you write about your grief.
Thank you.
Of course. I think that is absolutely helpful. It's definitely medicine. You know, because that's how we learn, and we don't all get to sit down with each other, you know, and talk about what's going on. So it does feel like, I don't know, reading like a diary or blog or something. Do you write extensively? I mean, do you write outside of that?
Journal extensively. I think I've kept a journal since I was, I want to say like 7 or 8.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like just have boxes full of like journals and like all these versions of myself that is kind of fun to revisit. I blog a little bit, but essentially like really journaling is kind of where my heart is. Like that's my practice. And it's also really helpful just as far as grief goes, because it's really nice to have a space to get it all out. And then sometimes in journaling, I'll maybe read something and be like, oh, I feel okay sharing this. Mm-hmm. It's like a little piece of like something that I'm dealing with, that I know other people are going through. So it's also really interesting to kind of like pick out for myself which parts feel safe to share, or I feel safe enough to share. Because I think that's the other thing we deal with too with grief, like social media kind of makes us more accessible. Mm-hmm. And it also kind of portrays this idea that we are readily accessible, that our grief is open to public consumption. So it's really nice for me to have those moments where I get to like mindfully pick what I want to share.
Yeah, you have to definitely, from my own experience too, like, because if you're not ready to have those conversations, go deeper, or for someone's criticism or
is the hard part. Like criticism and grief is just like, oh, I was just sharing to share. I didn't know that you felt that way. I didn't know people could feel that way. I also didn't really know you could have an opinion on my grief.
Right.
That's real interesting.
Yeah. I have a really good friend who often posts in her posts, like, not to criticize. She's like very into consent training, and she's a lawyer, actually, chosen family lawyer. Yeah. So she's in New York. They're now, but you know, they're like,
don't cross coach. Don't.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's a really powerful thing to say in grief, mm-hmm. like in all areas of life, but grief in particular. Like, I am sharing to share. I'm not sharing because I want advice. And I think it's also really helpful for people to ask, like, what do you need right now? Do you need ear, or do you want to like hear advice, or do you want me to try to help you problem solve? Because sometimes the answer is like, no, I just want to vent about how shitty this feels. Like, please let me just sit in my shitty feelings for a minute and don't try to fix it.
Right.
Yeah.
That's like grief role modeling, you know?
And it's hard. It's hard though. It's so hard to see someone you love going through a really uncomfortable, hurtful experience and to just like witness and not fix. It sucks.
Yeah. Definitely been there, and also have learned, probably the hard way, that like the inclination to mother or to, you know, rescue is part of like our own, you know, programming and
discomfort.
Right. Yeah.
Deep discomfort over feelings. Yes.
Right. Like,
like, please feel better so I can feel better.
Yeah. I think that's so cool though, that there's so much conversation and so much, you know, like I recently have had some friends who, you know, they're going through their mom's death, and I can say, like, you know, there's this person you can talk to, these groups you can join, follow this person, and feel like they're in good hands. And also I can remove myself from that old habit of being like, oh, you know, I wanna, you know, be a part of this or something.
Like fix. I want to fix this.
Right. Mm-hmm. So I feel like that's a silver lining of this, you know, someone called it the big pandemonium. Like,
truly,
we can get into these spaces and talk about how like no one's doing it perfectly, and
there is no perfect. Right? We're all gonna fuck this up. It's fine.
That's such a relief.
Isn't it?
Because I think like my wife's really into meditation, and years ago I really wasn't. And part of it was because I had this fear that I would do it wrong, you know, or
like, I'm not feeling what you're supposed to feel when you meditate, or like, I just hear alarms going off. I just hear all the ambient noise. Like, am I doing this wrong?
Right.
I hear my thoughts real loud.
Like, this is worse. Actually,
this
somehow.
Is actually worse. I feel more anxious than when I sat down.
Yeah. And so it took me, you know, this long. We've been together for 6 years. So it's taken me this long to like, okay, there's, you know, all kinds of ways to show up, to do things, to meditate, be with it. And it doesn't have to be, you know, perfect or the best or.
I wonder if that is like tapping into some like Western capitalistic idea of like perfectionism. Like we, and I feel like social media sometimes makes that worse too, because it's like we have to do things in this like perfectly curated, like just like perfect, perfect, perfect. Like there's no room for error, because like the minute that you mess up, it's like the world ends. It's like, it becomes a catastrophe. So I think that it makes sense that we all have this deep fear of like fucking up. It's
right.
Scary.
Yeah. And goes right back to like with people, you know, responding and, you know, mm-hmm. and the fear of getting canceled or called out or, you know, all these things that, that can happen. And that's why I really lean into mess, because I do think that, you know, there's that like, you know, humor and dark humor and also messiness that's all around this, because I've totally fucked up when I was supposed to be more present or, you know, helpful.
Yeah.
Because grief is so loaded. It's like,
it's complicated. It's layered. It's big. Grief is big.
yeah like, and it triggers so much too.
Totally. And like we're all also moving through our own grief, so it's like,
right,
it's like we're all trying to help each other while we're also being triggered by each other's grief, and like we're all just trying to swim through it and do the best that we can. And sometimes like our best looks different. Like my best today is going to look better than my best like 2 weeks ago, which is going to look better than my best like a year from now, you know, our capacity right. level shift.
Right. When did you, I'm curious, like when you started recognizing that you were like a grief person that people would come to, or, you know, was that kind of like a revelation or?
Yes and no. I feel like for pretty much all of my life, I've just been that person that people tell things to, like standing in line at the bank, going out, like minding my own business. People have always told me things that they've maybe not told other people, or have expressly been like, I've never told anyone this before, or just like I've just attract those people, I think. So I think that when my mom died, I really threw myself into just like thinking about grief and talking about it and like trying to find resources and trying to find books and like literally trying to wrap my brain around this experience that I was going through. And like part of what is really helpful to me personally is talking and like processing. Mm-hmm. So I think that too, like part of it was like I started my Instagram because I was really interested in death care, and I had just trained as an end of life doula. But I also was like, what is this? Like I need to talk about this and figure it out. So I think the act of doing that kind of then also attracted people who were grieving to me, because I was just out there talking about it. So I think that's kind of how I realized like, oh, people are finding me because I'm talking about this. And I also think too, there's a large part of it is the fact that like I'm Black and I'm queer and I'm talking about grief. And I think mm-hmm. that those spaces are like, we've been talking about it for so long. So many of us are just born inherently into grief. There is so much to grieve, but it is so helpful to have like queer BIPOC community who is actively talking about grief, because sometimes it feels like this thing that we're just not supposed to name, or there's so much collective grief and personal grief and like disenfranchised grief that it's like, where do we start? Where do I start and where does it end? Like, it's hard to figure out. So I think that's kind of how I figured it out, just like talking about it and being open about it and seeing people's reactions. making some people deeply uncomfortable, crying in stairwells, like people stumbling onto that, but also people like the really wonderful discovery that there are people who want to talk about it. People are like, oh my God, it's not just me. And that brings me a lot of comfort. Like, shit, it is not just me. It is like, I know, again, it's really cliche, but that saying of like, it's the club that you wish you didn't have to join. It's like, it's so true. It is kind of a club.
For myself, I felt like coming out as a death, you know, worker or worshiper or whatever, was similar to coming out as queer. You know, like it's been so long that I've been interested and attracted to grief and storytelling that it was just kind of like you said, it's very layered. And so yes. Like just a few years ago, I was like, oh, I guess this is part of me. This is who I am and I have to show up.
Yes.
And that takes a lot of courage because like you said, it makes people uncomfortable at times. Or they're like, yes, me too. And thank God.
Yeah. Right. I feel like too, sometimes it's like people will be deeply uncomfortable, but years later, they'll remember you. Like what if they find themselves like, you know, with a death or with a loss or with some kind of grief, they will remember that they talked to you because who else at the cocktail party is talking about like cremations or like grieving or like what that bodily experience is like? It sticks in the memory. It's not easily forgettable.
Yeah. I've definitely been that person. I'm definitely drawn to those conversations and those people.
Totally that person at the party talking about old Hollywood deaths and like the Black Dahlia and will the case ever be solved?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I really wish that would be solved, by the way.
I know, right?
But that's like another conversation that people shy away from. They really don't. And this is something that like been kind of on a kick about lately too, is like queer grief. And then also violent death and like how we're surrounded by it constantly. And then, you know, within our own community, there's sort of a little bit of like, but not that kind of death, you know?
Yeah.
We want to talk about like hospice and, you know, but also like, this is so much a part of the experience of being a person.
Yeah, that's such a great point. And also like it's definitely not the only part of being queer, but I also feel like that like living with the constant threat of violence and the constantly being aware that you could be facing violence just for showing up in the world as you are, like looking at all of the deaths of like our Black, queer, transgender like community, it is strange that we in like especially like the death care community, I feel like you said, like you talk about hospice, we talk about palliative care, we talk about those kind of not meter, but like those conversations are easier to have than talking about somebody who is like violently attacked because of their queerness, or because of their transness, or because of their non-binariness, you know? I mean, death care is a social justice issue, as is grief, because it's questions of like, who gets access to these things that make their deaths easier? Who gets access to these things that make their lives easier so that their deaths can be easier? Who gets access, period? Who gets to show up, period? I feel like these are all the questions that we should be asking ourselves as people who work in death care and grief care, because they're here. And I think it kind of circles back to this idea of that we don't necessarily have to have the answers to these, but we should be doing what we can to be in community to try to find these answers together, because they're questions that need to be asked. Because they're big things, you know?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, the conversation is really, I think, what is, you know, what's needed.
Yeah. What's needed. And also, like, again, coming back to that idea of balance, like balancing, like showing up and like listening and trying to find answers, and also stepping back and letting like queer, trans, non-binary people in our communities, like tell us what they need. And being like, okay, great. Let's figure out ways to get that to you. I think it can be hard to try to find that line between like actively listening and like almost like kind of like trying to save, mm-hmm. like actively listening and engaging in a savior complex.
Right.
But then again, I also feel like that's just the struggle we all should be like, you know, we should all just be wrestling that. I think the only way to figure that out is to continue showing up to conversations and like finding that for yourself. Because unless we practice it, we never get anywhere.
Yeah. I mean, it's another one of those like really uncomfortable, challenging situations, because you might get it wrong.
Like, you probably will, to be honest.
Probably will.
And it doesn't feel good. No. But, you know, again, it doesn't feel good, but what does feel good is like getting it wrong and acknowledging you got it wrong, and then like apologizing, like truly apologizing, and then just like coming back to it.
Yeah. I hope that, you know, we see more of that versus just like straight up canceling people. I mean, I also do think that sometimes people really do need to be taken down lots of notches.
Yeah, totally.
So that they don't have these huge platforms where they can mm-hmm. say really hurtful and tone deaf things.
Totally.
But like in instances where people recognize like, oh, I was speaking like totally from my own experience, and
yeah,
and then have awareness. Mm-hmm. Like specifically, my wife was telling me yesterday that Jane Campion apologized to Serena Williams and mm-hmm. Venus Williams for being, you know, in her own deal. And yeah. We're like, that's interesting. It'll be interesting to see, because, you know, I think people keep waiting for like JK Rowling to like somehow come around from all
this. I feel like that ship is sailed. We can let her go. It's okay. Like,
yeah. So
we have Harry Potter. It's truly fine. No.
Yeah. He's in the safe space.
Yeah, totally. And again, love the fact that they did a reunion and she was not invited. It
right.
just, my heart sang, truly.
Yeah. Because there's yeah. potential for healing, you know, even if yeah. one person is completely, you know, oblivious or whatever, that yeah. not even oblivious, just toxic.
I think the hard part is that like you can't want healing for someone more than the person wants the healing for themselves. Mm-hmm. So it would be really lovely if one day she came around and was like, you know what, I was speaking from like a real place of ignorance and like my own stuff, and I'm so sorry for the harm that I caused. Let me donate some money, let me mm-hmm. take some trainings, let me read some books, let me talk to like some people and figure my stuff out, and also like remove myself from community for a while so that I can work on myself without causing any extended harm. Do I think that will happen? There's always hope. But yeah, and even with the situation that happened with Jane and Serena and Venus, I actually was just watching the video for the first time this morning. So deeply uncomfortable watching that, because like my immediate thought was like, why did you as a white person pick two black women to like punch down on, mm-hmm. instead of maybe picking like a white man in the audience to be like, maybe like you don't have to do what I do, or you don't have to deal with what I deal with. Like, why did you pick two black women who are so deeply accomplished to like punch down on and to feel better about yourself? And I felt for them, because as a black woman, I recognized their reactions of like laughing and clapping. And I just like immediately in my body felt the discomfort, because I've been in those spaces where you can't react the way you want to, because you then get painted as like the angry Black woman for rightly being angry. So yeah, her apology is an apology. But again, I, as like a Black woman watching that, just like so deeply felt that discomfort of like, oh God, I've been in those spaces where I can't have the reaction that I want to have. So I'm just going to sit and clap and smile. And then when I get home and I'm in my safe space, like we can have the moment. It's just shitty.
It is shitty. I appreciate you sharing that. I am curious as to what will come from that. Because I hope that, you know, I don't know about Jane Campion because I don't know her, but I hope that it, you know, helps other people have conversations. Like, don't do this.
Don't do this. Don't do that. Don't do that. Don't be that. Like, just don't.
Because it's a microaggression, but it's also, it's really coming from a place of, I'm so in my own deal. Like I don't even see your humanity and your experience.
See, I would challenge that it's a macro aggression.
Okay. I accept that challenge.
And I would say that that's a macro aggression because of one, her position, and two, the fact that it was in a very public forum, and three, the fact that it was just so deeply unnecessary. Like literally could have like done what she needed to do, get on stage, be cute, and like got off stage, or like complimented them or talked about someone else entirely. But right. She literally in that moment made the decision to talk about the two of them. And on top of that, it's like, I'm also just like, who is rushing to defend Serena and Venus? As opposed to the people who are like rushing to defend Jane and being like, oh, wasn't that serious? Like she was just joking. And like those like moments where whiteness tells you not to take it so seriously and that it was just a joke. Like those are those moments of like some real deep grief and like feeling kind of crazy, like crazy for feeling upset about this because whiteness is telling me that it's just a joke and I should be complimented, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, it's so cringe. It's unbearable. And I feel like the Academy Awards, unfortunately, as much as I love watching movies and films and stuff, they're just so cringe. I'm still not like back since Moonlight got absconded by whatever LA movie. I didn't see that one.
Is it La La Land?
Yes. And then they were all on stage and it was just so, I was like screaming in a hotel room because we were like on this trip in Utah. Like, I was like, what the fuck?
Like, are you serious? And like, of course, yes, serious because racism, but like, wow, racism. It's just, it's yelling racism right now because Moonlight? Are you kidding me?
Yeah, such a powerful film.
Such a beautiful, powerful film, and lost to La La Land.
It didn't lose.
Oh, no. Yes, but just...
It won, but then they...
Oh, right, and the people. They were on stage. Oh, God.
It's so terrible.
Coming back to me.
Sorry.
The secondhand embarrassment of it all is just flooding. But when you think about it, it makes sense why we can't move forward, because white supremacy keeps white cis men in power, and white cis men are not going to willingly give up their power, nor are just like the white people who benefit from a system of power that oppresses the rest of us. So it totally makes sense to me as to why we can't move past it. But the question then is, oh God, what do we do? What are the ways that we try to shift that power? And ultimately, like, we just have to burn the whole system down. That's the problem. Like, the system cannot exist as it is. Like, there's no level of restructuring that's available that will make it fair to all of us. We need an entirely new system. And how do we get to that?
Yeah. I mean, again, big questions. I mean, I really thought, like, you know, a few years ago, we'll call it 2020, when people really started recognizing that like systems of oppression are not designed for equality,
right?
Like the police. I thought maybe, you know, we were in a more of a movement towards, you know, I think what's happening now is, whether we like it or not, pandemic, virus, plague, all this stuff is sort of like,
yeah,
right, sort of unveiling and tearing things down whether we want it to or not.
Totally.
Yeah. But it was like such a strange time because people were like, oh wow, the police are bad. It's like
oh my god, I just have to say, like, I just spent so much of 2020, like, aside from like my own personal grief of losing my mom, and like the grief of trying to survive as a Black queer femme just in during a whole plague, I just was so angry because there were so many things that were being like unearthed as issues. And I just remember being like Black queer Indigenous people like have been saying this for so many centuries. We've literally been saying that none of this shit is designed for us, and that the system literally hates all of us. And it wasn't until a pandemic where all of us were affected, and also namely like white society was affected, that people were like, oh wow, like the education system is like terrible, the prison industrial complex, like cops, like things aren't accessible. Like, yes, marginalized people have been saying this for years, and now it's like, oh my god, let's listen in. Like, wonderful. But again, it's like that grief of feeling like you're a person of color and you've just been screaming into the void about all of the unfairness, all of the atrocities, and then having a moment where that forces all of society to wake up because everyone is affected. And now being like, oh God, I guess you were right. There's real anger and real grief there. I mean, even the fact that we are on Zoom right now, like the fact that virtual settings have been accessible this whole time, but right, like no one's just been listening to disabled people. So, you know, like all yes, of the feelings there. So many feelings.
Yeah, it's like, it's kind of like both. It's like, it's surprising and not surprising, like where people are.
Yep.
And so how to navigate that and get people to listen and do the work on their own free time, and you know, change some shit, just what, where they can, when they can, you know.
Yeah.
That's, yeah, that would be amazing.
I think it's really helpful for people to know that, I mean, change is like a big word. There's like capital C change that we're all striving for, but change also looks like even these conversations, like right, have those conversations with like your friends, your family, people in your immediate circle, because you never know what conversation is going to be the one that is a light bulb moment for somebody, that where they go, oh shit, it clicks now, I get it. Let me talk to like my people about that, because I'm having an epiphany, let me spread it. So yeah, there's capital C change, and there's also just like being brave and having the conversations that are uncomfortable.
And I would even go further to say that people need to, you know, hold other people that they love accountable.
Oh, truly. Accountability is a love language. Let's be real about that, because it's literally saying to someone like, I love you deeply. And alongside that love, I really don't want you navigating the world like this and also causing harm to other people because of this. So like, let's sit and like interrogate this a bit, and from like a place of non-judgment, maybe, but like, let's just talk, because I'm real concerned about what we're doing here. That's love. I feel like I also want to speak to the idea of staying kind, because I feel like if you are somebody that has been through a lot of shit and you still are able to like stay kind through it, like that I feel like is, what am I trying to say? Like that feels like a form of victory, like mm-hmm. being able to stay kind and soft when the world has thrown so much at you. And alongside that, you can absolutely still be like a really soft, kind, gentle person and have boundaries and be like, I am so kind, but also please do not fuck with me. Please don't send me back to that place. I will go there. I just don't want to.
Like, right.
Yeah. Can like absolutely be kind and boundaried.
Yeah. It's definitely like all of this stuff is an action, you know, yes. All of it is not passive at all. And mm-hmm. so that has definitely been a big reason why I've leaned more into things like meditation and even some Buddhist philosophy, because it's like those reminders, like you're saying, but it's not easy, because not at all. You know, people say stupid shit and you're like, really, this is,
I want to send you there so badly. And you're like, I'm trying to be a different person,
right?
Please let me be.
Right. You really are in your Jesus here.
Let's see how long the kindness sticks. I'm right, in right. like the first month of my Jesus year, so
okay. I'll have to check back.
Yes, check back, do an update. I guess the message that I would want people to get, like, kindness is a choice. Grief is not a choice, but kindness is. And like, again, Black, brown, Indigenous, queer, trans, non-binary people, we're not new to this grief thing. Like, a lot of us have been sitting in grief since we were even before a thought in someone's head. So I guess like my messaging really is like, listen to us, like acknowledge that our grief is real, it's present, it's valid, it's painful, and we live with it daily. And we're not crazy for it. Our grief deserves to be acknowledged. And truly we deserve the world, and not this world. We deserve a better world than this. Right. And so therefore, because of that, like we are all and should all be doing our best to like give that to us and to give that to the generations after us who also deserve that. So yeah, Black queer people deserve the world.
And I would even venture to say an updated and much more interesting, relevant version of Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Oh my God, Buffy.
I have this fantasy that one day someone really cool, maybe a woman, will remake it, you know, and it'll be like this really interesting, diverse cast.
Can we get like the Once More with Feeling version with like an updated diverse cast? Because like that might be a version of life I might want to like enter into.
Yeah.
Because like a true queer, I love some musical theater.
Oh, fuck yeah.
My secret talent. Like, does knitting count as a secret talent?
Yes. I don't
know. Okay, then, yeah. I'm a knitter. I knit.
Did you make your sweater?
No, I didn't make any sweater. I made this scarf that I'm looking at right now. But yes, okay. I knit. I can sing a bit. I feel like, again, it's not something I do on purpose. I feel like my secret talent is just getting people to tell me things.
That is a secret talent, though.
Just want to tell me things.
Yeah. I mean, you know, to your credit, that means that, you know, you have a safe energy or, you know, a trustworthy depth. What's your sun sign? I don't know if I asked you that before.
Oh, so my big three, Pisces sun, Sag moon, and Aquarius rising.
Of course I knew you're Pisces because you just went on a birthday trip.
Happy birthday. It's that water sign energy. Just
Pisces sun, Sag moon, and
Aquarius rising.
Aquarius rising. Interesting.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
I relate to those a lot because I'm a Gemini, Sag, and Scorpio.
know right. so many Geminis and Sagittarius. Sag.
Right. Yeah. So there's that kind of like, I don't know, like mysticism. And Pisces, definitely poetic mysticism.
Oh, totally.
And Aquarius is like alien.
And also just like little spacey.
Right. Yeah.
Spacey energy happening.
Totally. What's the best way for people to reach out to you, you know, that want to participate in grief offerings or just to
totally
say hey?
Yeah, my website is a really great way to reach out to me. It is www.gloriushum.com. And from there, you can message me to drop me a line, say hey, schedule a consult. My Instagram is also a pretty good way to get a hold of me, which is my handle, The Glorious Hum. It's a pretty great way to find me. And yeah, those are the ways that folks can reach me.
Excellent. Thank you so much for sitting down with me today. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
And happy birthday month.
Thank you.
Continues. I hope you're, you know, living that. Hey y'all, I'm back. Whew, there's something that feels so good about feeling seen, you know? And when someone else says, I've been there, it's just that little acknowledgement that it's just so important. And I feel like it's the beginning of moving through grief, just being able to feel witnessed and heard. And that's what this conversation just did for me, re-listening to it. My heart feels a little less heavy. Yeah, it's really important. And I just want to say to you that, you know, whatever works for you, whether it's journaling or whatever modality, you know, therapy, it's valid. And if you're in grief or you know someone who is in grief, please, I want to encourage you to go and find Naomi at The Glorious Hum. I know that I said that she mostly focuses, you know, her grief support on BIPOC and BIPOC queer folks. But I also want to say that it's been my experience the last couple of years, you know, that we really need to get outside of our echo chambers in every possible way, but including with grief, because if we're only understanding our own experiences, then how are we really growing and how are we not creating harm for others, right? So, you know, I feel like we just, the more is better in this situation. And it doesn't mean that you're always going to find what you need necessarily exactly for your grief, but you might learn something, you know, about someone else. And I think that's just as important. Grief is so universal too. You know, it's just about being people, really. And I just want to share with you that I went to this artist talk a few years ago, and I was expecting this, like, you know, body of work, retrospective type thing. And the artist's name is Lita Albuquerque, and she's amazing. If you don't know who she is, she's a conceptual artist. And instead, you guys, she showed up to talk about how her house had burned down in a fire in Malibu. And I mean, you could hear a pin drop. The audience was riveted. I was too. I mean, it was really devastating to hear about how she lost all of her artwork in this fire. And you can say what you want about privilege and things like that, but what I took away from it was just this person who was like, I was going to show up and give this talk about this, you know, 40-year, you know, life history, and now it's all gone. And it just reminded me, like, of how impermanent everything is, and, you know, everything changes. Yeah, it's kind of intense, but, like, you know, that's what we're doing here, right? We're just acknowledging that every person
has these experiences. And it doesn't help us if we're holding them inside, right? Because then it becomes disease. And then we get sick. And then, you know, what happens? Are we taking good care of ourselves? Are we able to take good care of each other? Probably not, right? So we need to put our stories out there. And, you know, that's why I love having this space, so I can share my story with you and other people's stories with you. The last thing I want to say is that it's Bandcamp Friday. And another thing I want to mention is that it's Bandcamp Friday, and that means it would be wonderful if you would go and show some love to my friend Charity from the band Mother Marrow, because they gifted us the music for this season. And I think it's so important to support independent artists, and I'm sure many of you do too. So, you know, and also you could find them on Instagram, tell them Moon Says Hi. You know, show them so much support. It's really just, you know, one of the things that you can do for me. Also, if you like this podcast and you want to rate it, give it a good rating, please. That really does help me out a lot. Like I always say, you know, share it with your grandma, share it with your neighbor, share it with your next, what is it, your Tinder date? death makes such a great conversation piece over dinner. So, you know, until next time, I hope you're doing something that gives you so much pleasure. It is the weekend. I hope you can lean into that. And I love you. I appreciate you. And I don't like to say goodbye. So, till next time, be well.